This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Marching through Georgia, perusing the pampas, where in the world is Mark Sanford? It's Wednesday and time to span the globe with another edition of the Political Junkie.
There you go again.
When I hear your new ideas, I'm reminded of that ad. Where's the beef?
Extremism in the defense of liberty is no vice.
You don't have Nixon to kick around anymore.
Lipstick.
But I'm the decider.
On Wednesdays, NPR political editor Ken Rudin joins us to catch up, and he may be out of breath this week. Carmen Sandiego has nothing on South Carolina's governor and maybe presidential aspirate who blew town last week. Even his wife said she didn't know where he was. He's back in Columbia now at the State House and holds a news conference there in half an hour. Political dysfunction, thy name is Albany, one less would-be governor of California. The president took questions from reporters and Iranians yesterday. Today, he lets ABC camp out at the White House and holds a town hall meeting tonight. And there's another mea culpa from Nevada Senator John Ensign later this hour. Great Latino ballplayers, steroids, and Cooperstown. But first, the political junkie, NPR political editor Ken Rudin, joins us here in Studio 3A, as he does every week. Hey, Ken, as usual. Well, he starts with the trivia question.
Hi, Neil. I didn't realize mea culpa was running for re-election.
Well,
but
that's true.
Well, actually, the big story of the week is, besides the John and Kate split, you know, which we're going to talk about later.
And endlessly.
And, well, speaking of endlessly, is the Mark Sanford speculation. Obviously, he turned out to be in Argentina all this time. You know, he's considered very pompous. Yes, sorry. Anyway, so he's not on the Appalachian Trail. Now, anyway, the question, we don't know what he was doing in Argentina. He will discuss it in a half hour. But who was the last U.S. politician to get stoned in South America?
And, of course, you don't mean to suggest in any way that the governor of South Carolina was there to inhale.
We have no idea what the governor was doing, but there was a politician who did get stoned in South America.
So if you think you know the name of the politician last stoned, the last U.S. politician to be stoned in Latin America, give us a phone call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. And we have to begin with this Mark Sanford story.
You can't make this stuff up. And it's just remarkable. Because here it is for the last couple of days. I mean, he's been missing for 6 days. His wife didn't know where he was. He was also missing on Father's Day. He has 4 young children. And this is a potential, widely speculated as a potential Republican presidential candidate in 2012. Anyway, he's missing for 6 days. And his staff says, well, we don't know where he is. And then they say, well, finally, he's hiking on the Appalachian Trail somewhere or there. And we don't know where he is, but that's where he is. And as it turned out this morning, he arrived at Atlanta's Hartsfield Airport to say that he had been in Argentina for the past 6 days, unwinding after a very contentious state legislative session. Remember, he rejected.
He turned down $700 million.
From President Obama's stimulus package, and the state Supreme Court ordered him to accept it. He's had a lot of fights with Democrats and Republicans in the state legislature, and after he accepted it, Sanford decided to disappear.
And a lot of people in Columbia were saying, what happens if there's a prison riot?
Exactly. Anything. Who's in charge? And the lieutenant governor, Andre Bauer, who's also a Republican, said, look, you know, the governor's entitled to do whatever he wants, but at least let us know what's the chain of command here. And so Republicans as well as Democrats were very critical of the governor's disappearance.
And let's see if we can get some callers on the line who think they know the answer to today's trivia question. The last U.S. politician to be stoned in Latin America that we know about. Let's go to Mark. And Mark's with us from Cedar Rapids.
Hi, it was Nelson Rockefeller.
Nelson Rockefeller would have been governor of New York at the time or vice president of the United States?
Well, he was governor at the time. It was 1969.
Well, I never heard of him being stoned in South America. I know, I don't believe that's the guy we're thinking of.
Okay.
Mark, thanks for the call. Let's see if we go next to Chris. Chris calling from San Francisco.
Hi.
Go ahead, Chris.
Richard Nixon.
Richard Nixon.
Well, actually, that is the correct answer. And, of course, it was a trick question. He didn't inhale. He actually...
That we know of.
Right. He was the vice president in 1958. He was in Caracas, Venezuela. And protesters surrounded his motorcade, started kicking the car, throwing it and throwing stones at him. So, therefore, Richard Nixon got stoned.
Chris, you're the happy winner of this week's No Prize, along with David in Tucson, Arizona. I just handed an email. He emailed in with the correct answer, Richard Nixon in Caracas. Good thing things have changed so much for American politicians.
Right,
in
we're
Venezuela.
Much more popular in Venezuela
yeah, of course,
now.
Yeah.
Right.
So you're going to be the happy recipients of this week's No Prize, the fabulous and beautifully designed T-shirt. So, Chris, we're going to put you on hold.
Oh, great. Thank you.
All right. Thanks very much. So, ding, 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 a quick answer to today's trivia question. And, well, interestingly, Richard Nixon back in the Political Junkie News.
Well, of course, you know, he resigned the presidency in 1974, and we've been listening to his tape recordings since 1980, and there was a new bunch released this week by the Nixon Library that you could hear on the via the National Archives.
Well, you could sort of puzzle out.
Right, exactly. It wasn't always clear. You know, he talked a lot about how he was out to destroy Thomas Eagleton, the unfortunate Democrat who was nominated briefly for vice president in 1972. I thought the best
thing... He backed him 1,000%.
He did. And I thought the most interesting thing of all of it was the stuff on abortion. Of course, this was not long right after the Supreme Court's famous Roe decision legalizing abortion. And Richard Nixon is heard on tape saying, well, you know, I'm not sure if abortion is a good thing because it might lead to permissiveness, but I can understand when it's used, especially if it's involving a child from a black and a white, you know, a child...
Interracial couple.
Interracial couple,
uh-huh.
or rape. But, I mean, the way he put it is just so...
another smoking gun, as it were. He also said that we found out that he'd told John Stennis, the then chairman of the Senate Armed Services Committee, ahead of time about the invasion of Cambodia, which was, of course, a closely guarded secret.
Right, and, of course, then I think that was their excuse that the Democrats gave it. It's okay. Of course, John Stennis was a very hawkish pro-war.
Along with Richard Russell, senator from Louisiana, also very hawkish.
Although Richard Russell, as you well remember, died in 1969 prior to the invasion of Cambodia.
Well, I thought he said he told Senator Russell, too.
He may have
it was
a seance.
One of those nighttime prayer sessions in the White House. Anyway, Richard Nixon back in the news. But let's go to the governor's race in California. We're looking ahead to that. And one of the main contenders on the Democratic side has said, no mas.
He did say that. Antonio Villaraigosa, who's the mayor of Los Angeles, who was thought to be doing very well. If you think that Gavin Newsom, the mayor of San Francisco, and Attorney General Jerry Brown, the former governor and former mayor of Oakland, represent the northern part of California, Villaraigosa, who's Latino, who has strong support in the South, was expected to do pretty well in next year's primary. However, he said that there are a lot of problems, and there are a lot of problems in Los Angeles, and he said that I'm going to bow out of the race to focus on getting L.A. better, and he's going to be sworn in for another term on July 1st.
And we're also going to be hearing more about Senator John Ensign of Nevada. He, of course, confessed last week to having had an affair with a wife of a former campaign worker who was also the wife of a former staff member, and this week came back to Washington, D.C., and apologized to the Republican caucus.
Not a great week for Republicans, of course. Giving up the chairmanship of the Republican Policy Committee. It's the number four position in the Republican leadership in the Senate. Some people suggested that maybe he should resign his Senate seat, although polls back home said people do want him to stay. He's then up for re-election until 2012. So he does have time to mend fences back home. But again, as we said last week, it hurts the Republican efforts to come up with a challenger to Harry Reid, the Senate Democratic leader who's up for re-election in 2010. And several years ago, Ensign ran against Reid and lost by only 428 votes. So once upon a time, John Ensign was a very popular politician in Nevada. It remains to be seen whether he can recapture that.
And because of the position of these two people involved, the other couple involved in this case, that they were members of his staff, either campaign or senatorial staff, apparently some ethical violations may be involved?
The Senate Ethics Committee has not decided whether to investigate yet, but obviously that's there. Of course, if there's an extortion there, then there may be even more investigations going on, the police, shall we say?
Yeah,
both Ensign and Mark Sanford are mentioned as possible Republican presidential candidates 2012. By the way, Haley Barbour begins his tour of Iowa and New Hampshire today.
The current governor of Mississippi.
But for the most part, it's not been a good week for Republicans.
Let's also talk about a week in Albany that has been neither Republicans or Democrats. The comedy of the New York State Senate gets funnier and funnier.
Now it's obviously no comedy with a T. A lot of D, comma D. And what happened yesterday, this New York State Senate is split 31-31. And so both the Democrats and Republicans showed up yesterday at a session, and the Democrats actually snuck in earlier than expected. And what they did was they turned off the micro. They were in charge of the audio and video equipment. They turned off the microphones and the video whenever the Republicans were talking. And basically, both the 31 Republicans and 31 Democrats were talking at each other and yelling at each other. And it was a food fight.
This is, of course, a special session called by the Governor David Patterson to pass critical legislation that has to be passed before the end of the month, or special authorities for places like New York City run out. And it's nice to know that sixth grade goes on forever.
I mean, we laugh and roll our eyes on this, but these, as you say, this is serious legislation that is not getting passed, and it's not helping David Patterson's chances of getting reelected next year, or at least elected, because he became governor when another governor got involved in some problems like Elliot Spitzer and prostitution. So it's been a very weird bunch of months for governors on both sides of the aisle.
And a correction, Richard Russell was from Georgia. I misidentified the state as Louisiana.
But he was still dead by 1970.
Still from heaven at that point. And going on to the Senate race in Illinois, Roland Burris, another accidental senator in this case. Well, there's some thought that he may not only hang on to his Senate seat, there was some doubt about that for a while, but may decide to run for election on his own.
Well, he might do that. Of course, they said that they are not going to, the state legislature, which was looking into his activities, ultimately said that they will not investigate any accusations of perjury.
Yeah, vagueness is not the same as lying.
Right, about his relationship with the former governor, Blagojevich.
And there's some thought about somebody who may run again. Against him as well.
Well, there are a lot of people who are going to run against him. Who are you thinking of?
I was thinking about the White House talking up a female candidate.
Oh, that's right. Lisa Madigan, the state attorney general. I'm sorry, I didn't read your lips. Attorney General Lisa Madigan, who had been looking at a run for governor for a long time. Of course, she was thinking of running against Rob Blagojevich when Blagojevich was such an easy target. Now that he's gone and Pat Quinn is the new governor of Illinois, the White House would love to keep Quinn, who just so happens works with David Axelrod, the client of David Axelrod, but also that they think that Lisa Madigan would be a stronger Senate candidate.
Ken Rudin, our political junkie, is with us, as he is every Wednesday. Up next, we'll take you behind the scenes of yesterday's presidential news conference at the White House. Don Gagne will join us. If you'd like to know how a presidential press briefing works in this administration, give us a call, 800-989-8255, email talk@npr.org. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. It's Wednesday, Political Junkie Day. Ken Rudin joins us, as always. He's NPR's political editor. If you don't hear him on the radio, he's probably updating his blog. You can check that out at npr.org/junkie. Any Richard Russell updates?
Yes, well, actually, not due to myself. I was thinking, I just remembered that in 1971, I was writing to Richard Russell, so I asked David Gura, our Talk of the Nation producer, and he did check. Richard Russell did die in 1971, so therefore Richard Nixon may have talked to Richard Russell.
On the phone.
On the phone during the invasion of Cambodia in 1970.
Yesterday, one of the things Ken wrote about was President Obama's news conference at the White House. Many of those watching noticed a change in tone between reporters and the president. There were some tough questions. Obviously, these events are not open to the public, so we want to take you behind the scenes in the Brady briefing room and speak with a veteran White House correspondent. What do you want to know about how a presidential press briefing works? Who gets to ask questions and why? Our phone number is 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. And joining us now from the White House is NPR White House correspondent Don Gagne. Hey, Don.
Hey, glad to be here.
And you've covered your share of presidential news conferences. So first question, Mr. White House correspondent, why did yesterday's news conference move from the Rose Garden on a beautiful summer's day into the Brady briefing room?
It sure seemed curious to me. I mean, what a beautiful backdrop that would have been. There is no official answer, but I am told there were concerns about the heat. It was going to get well into the 90s, or 80s anyway, yesterday here in a District of Columbia, June, and it was pretty humid. And I don't for a minute think they were worried that we reporters would be sweating and uncomfortable and suffering from dehydration and everything else. I think there might have been concerns that that it just doesn't look good to have a president taking questions on difficult topics and have him be covered in sweat from the humidity. So.
I think maybe they were just worried that more flies might attack him. But anyway, let me ask you a question. The president made his opening statement. He talked about Iran. He talked about the energy bill. He talked about health care. His first question, as might be expected, was on Iran. And now we're going to play a cut of tape from yesterday's news conference. And this is what the president had to say after he finished answering that first question on Iran.
Since we're on Iran, I know Nico Pitney is here from Huffington Post.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Nico, I know that you and all across the Internet, we've been seeing a lot of reports coming directly out of Iran. I know that there may actually be questions from people in Iran who are communicating through the Internet. Do you have a question?
Yeah, I did, but I wanted to use this opportunity to ask you a question directly from an Iranian.
And there's two questions about that, Don Gagne. Clearly, this was a setup. The president knew this question was out there.
And he tipped his hand. Now, he didn't quite tell us how much of a setup it was. He did reveal that he knew Nico Pitney from the Huffington Post was out there and that he had a question on a certain topic, even if we didn't know what the specific question, if he didn't know what the specific question would be. But yes, it was a setup. What we later learned was that the White House had seen the blog postings that Mr. Pitney had been doing and actually invited him to come, which is unusual.
And another question. So White House correspondents get to ask questions, and so do Iranian bloggers?
Well, that is the interesting thing here. Typically, and again, this administration has thrown a lot of the, usual, I won't call them rules, but let's just call them kind of standard routine, protocol, whatever, out the window. But it is interesting to kind of seek out a question, not even from a reporter, but from, someone in Iran, which is what Mr. Pitney was doing, passing along questions he had gotten through his own web postings, which isn't to say that there aren't there aren't plenty of ways that the president could entertain such questions and could arrange to do so. But it was unusual having it come up within a briefing room where a presidential press conference is taking place.
Ken?
Don, clearly the president seemed to welcome or expect the question from the Huffington Post, a questioner, but he seemed a little testy, I thought, with some questions about Iran from the guy from Fox News who asked him, what took you so long, from the CBS News reporter who said that, did you become tough because...
Well, we have that clip of tape, actually, Ken, so why don't we hear this clip of tape? This is Chip Reed of CBS News who asked him this question.
Some Republicans on Capitol Hill, John McCain and Lindsey Graham, for example, have said that up to this point, your response on Iran has been timid and weak. Today, it sounded a lot stronger. It sounded like the kind of speech John McCain has been urging you to give, saying that those who stand up for justice are always on the right side of history, referring to an iron fist in Iran, deplore, appalled, outraged. Were you influenced at all by John McCain and Lindsey Graham accusing you of being timid and weak?
What do you think?
So reporters, Don, being testy and President Obama being testy right back.
Yes. And what you miss just from the audio of that is the big smile that the president flashed before he kind of tossed out what I interpreted sitting there as a dig at not just at John McCain and those Republicans who have criticized him, but also at the reporter who asked it just a bit.
And there was another exchange, I think, on a healthcare question. Somebody asked him about his Spock-like logic, and he asked if that was a crack about his ears.
Yes, that was Jake Tapper of ABC. And Tapper also, when he was called on, he said, before I get to my question, I want to know if you would like to answer the question from David Jackson of USA Today that you dodged earlier. And the president said, well, if you want me to do that, then that's your question. And there was this little... back and forth.
No. Then I have a two-part question.
Yes. All right,
let's see if we can get some listeners in on this conversation. Arthur's on the line. Arthur calling us from Hollywood, California.
No, Hollywood, Florida.
Hollywood, Florida. Okay, one of those Hollywoods.
That's the one down here.
Yes, okay.
One is an observation, and it's wonderful to see the president answer questions at a press conference and do so intelligently, something we haven't seen in 8 years. In any event, he reads off a list and picks the reporters off of a list. Do those reporters know that they're going to be selected? That's number one. And number two, wouldn't it be better if the reporters who want to ask questions, I guess they don't want to have the people standing up and shouting the way it's been traditionally done, but why not have like a grab bag and put their names in a hat and let them pull out so it doesn't look as scripted as it seems to look, even though it may not be?
Arthur has clearly never been a White House press secretary. Don Gagne.
Well, I can tell you, too, that everybody goes into this wanting to ask questions, and everybody goes into these with a long list of questions. And you kind of keep your questions closely held, too. So you're not, you know, discussing or sharing your questions, especially if you think you've got good ones with your colleagues. But to his first question, do we know if we will get called on? It depends who you are. I mean, if you are with the wire services, if you're AP or Reuters, or if you're with the TV networks who have given up, TV time, preempted their regular programming to carry this press conference live, then those people all know going in that they will be called on. But the rest of us, we don't know. I mean, there have been times when I have been given a heads up before a press conference that I am on the list of people who the president intends to call on, but he hasn't gotten to me. You don't know if he's going to take 10 or 20 questions in a press conference. Then there have been times when, you go into it blind, and I'll tell you, I went into yesterday's press conference not knowing if I was on any list or not. But your name could come up anytime. And
they don't ask you to submit the questions?
And they do not. They do not ask you to submit the questions. And, I used to hear that a lot when I was covering the Bush administration as well. There was the sense that you would earn your place to get your question asked if they approved of your question in advance. And I'm not saying no one has ever done that, but I can tell you I never did that, and that is not a common practice at all. We all go in with a list of questions, and what happens is you sit there, and as a question similar to yours or exactly like one of yours is asked, you kind of cross it out your list, and you go through the press conference, and you're constantly revising your list as you go along. But there have been times when I've stood up to ask a question, and it's not until 30 seconds prior that you have finally decided yourself which one you're going to ask.
Arthur, we're going to give somebody else a chance, okay?
Thank you so much.
All right, bye-bye. Let's see if we can go next to Jack. Jack calling from Miami. This one, I believe, is also in Florida.
Hello?
Go ahead, Jack.
Hi, how you doing?
Good, thanks.
I was listening to your program, and I appreciate a lot of the finer points, but one thing I noticed is the president, I heard the press conference the other day, and I was very well impressed how he handled himself. And you're right, there was a lot of pressure there between him and the press. But I noticed that Helen Thomas seems to be taking a back seat or something.
Well, she's in the front row still, Don Gagne, but she doesn't get to ask too many questions.
She is. She's been called on, on occasion in recent years. I have to admit, off the top of my head, I don't know that President Obama has called on her in the four press conferences he has now held. I can't recall him calling on.
And she used to get called upon first in her role as the dean of the White House Press Corps. It was whoever's the senior correspondent for the AP or United Press International. She was with UPI, but that's a tradition that's gone by the wayside.
Well, the tradition
along
remains.
Along with UPI, for that matter.
Well, yes, the tradition remains. The senior wire correspondent in the room is always the one who gets the first question at presidential news conferences, but also at the daily briefing for the White House press secretary. And Helen Thomas occupied that seat for that position for many years. She still occupies the seat, even though UPI is now gone. I can tell you the seat now has a little brass plaque on it that says Helen Thomas. So it's the only seat in the room that is designated by a person's name because she is Helen Thomas. But her role these days, she is now a columnist for the Hearst newspaper chain. And, if you notice, presidents tend to not call on columnists at news conferences. In fact, there are very few columnists in the room, often none other than Helen herself. So
wow.
Because she is no longer a journalist working for the wires, and she is now someone who, engages in opinion in her columns, she's no longer in that mix of people who get called on regularly, though she does on occasion.
Jack, thanks very much. Let's see if we get one more call for Don Gagne, and let's go to Courtney. Courtney with us from Williamsburg, Virginia.
Hi, Mr. Gagne. My question regards special access. In particular, from a press perspective of this upcoming ABC event where they have access specifically to the White House and they're broadcasting the president's plan for health care. President Obama also made that joke recently about tossing and turning in his sleep at the radio and television dinner the other night and turning in his sleep and seeing Brian Williams next to him. I'm interested to know, conservatives make a big issue of, and possibly rightfully so, of access to the White House and a lack of objectivity, issues of whether or not the president has recently corresponded with Huffington Post and other groups. What's the general perspective from people sitting in those seats as far as the decisions that the president and his administration make about access?
We are all obviously looking for access to the president and the chance to ask questions and follow him around. The White House obviously gets to pick and choose which of those requests or proposals or whatever it grants. And a lot of factors go into it. And certainly some of it is, you know, they like this anchor or they like this reporter or whatever, and they may be more inclined to entertain a proposal from them. More than that, though, they are looking at what they will get out of this. Mm-hmm. And the thing with Brian Williams, that was basically a day in the life of the White House. And President Bush had done one of those with Tom Brokaw, I believe. Same network.
And, Don, I don't mean to cut you off, but we've got to break away for some an update on some breaking news.
All right.
All right, Don, thank you very much. NPR White House correspondent Don Gagne and Courtney, thank you very much for the call. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And wire services in Columbia, South Carolina, are reporting that Governor Mark Sanford says he was in Argentina to be unfaithful with a friend from Argentina. He's been unfaithful to his wife. Governor Mark Sanford again saying in Columbia, South Carolina today, "I've let a lot of people down." Gina Smith is a reporter for the state newspaper in South Carolina. Earlier today, acting on a tip, she traveled to the Atlanta airport where she found Governor Sanford, who had returned from Buenos Aires. And Gina Smith with us by phone from Atlanta. Good to have you with us. I assume this is news to you, too.
Yes, absolutely. Since I'm still here in Atlanta, I'm not at the press conference. I'm sort of getting it piecemeal through text messages from my colleagues.
And this is a shock. This is a shock.
Yeah, absolutely. It is a shock. You know, Neil, it's been sort of the story that's gradually come out bit by bit. The governor, certainly when the legislature ends every year, he does take a vacation. He goes to Sullivan's Island there on the coast of South Carolina on a fishing trip or a hunting trip, and it's never a big deal. But this year, when he suddenly went MIA and his staff didn't seem to know where he was or didn't seem willing to tell, the media all over the nation got very interested about what was going on, and particularly when we started hearing comments from his wife, Jenny Sanford, who was at the family's beach house with their four children, her saying she didn't know where he was and she wasn't particularly concerned. We had a feeling this was not just your typical summertime fishing trip, so we started digging around, looking at possibilities that he may not be hiking the Appalachian Trail, which is what his staff finally told the media late one night.
And we're getting word from the Capitol that the governor, he has said he's resigning as chairman of the Republican Governors Association.
Well,
South Carolina, a very conservative state, a very Republican state. Is he going to be able to survive as governor of South Carolina?
Oh, I don't know. You know, I mean, this is all happening while we're talking, and you're absolutely right. South Carolina, very Republican, very conservative. People are going to take this really, really hard. I really have to wonder if he indeed will remain governor at this point.
Ken Rudin, again, earlier we thought that Governor Sanford was an aspirant for the Republican presidential nomination. That is now by the boards.
Well, he could perhaps run for president of Argentina, but the thing that's just so bizarre here is that I mean, I'm as speechless. I wish you could see. What's amazing about radio is you can't see Neil and my face at this point because we're just so stunned. But here it is, back to back, another Republican rising star. The point is that as we saw with Elliot Spitzer in New York and Jim McGreevy in New Jersey, who resigned their governorships because of a sexual affair or whatever they were going on, both Republicans and Democrats, and Gina will tell you is better than anybody, that they don't like her. They don't like. Both parties don't like Mark Sanford. He's very unpopular. He's term limited. He can't run for re-election in 2010. But, I mean, he has very few friends in the state.
Gina Smith, congratulations on your scoop earlier today. And we appreciate you taking the time to speak with us today. We know you want to get to work.
Absolutely. Thanks so much. Stay tuned, huh?
Yeah, stay tuned. Gina Smith, a staff writer at The State in South Carolina. Again, Governor Mark Sanford returned from a mystery tip from Argentina to tell reporters in Colombia that he had an affair while he was away. He'd been unfaithful to his wife and is resigning as the chairman of the Republican Governors Association. Stay tuned. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.